The following is a meeting with disciples with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, given on May 24th, 1996, in Boston.
I have several... Okay. Picture's finished. I have several different topics. Something I was doing. We were having some meetings in Baltimore. I would read something, I would play a tape by Prabhupada, I would answer some questions by devotees. So I'd like to start by playing a tape excerpt. Yeah, if I could have the tape recorder over here to run it. Or it won't come. I can play it over there. I'll introduce it first. I gave a seminar in January in Vrindavan, made up entirely of excerpts of Prabhupada's tapes. I would play one and then I would comment on it. And I think it's become like a permanent part of my repertoire. I really like to do it at any kind of meeting, sometimes even in Srimad Bhagavatam classes. And so now I'm starting to collect new tape excerpts. I listen to Prabhupada's tapes, and some particular thing just strikes me. Some of them, that they may be humorous or very startlingly instructive, something about it, something very personal, just a something special about it. That I think, yes, this is a tape excerpt. Usually, since I'm playing it for audiences, I make it no more than 2 minutes. So now, in addition to my doing it myself, I've recruited a couple of devotees, Madhava at Gitanagari Press and Ram Roy. If anyone else would like to do that, you can. You have to listen to Prabhupada's tapes, and then you have to know something of what kind of things I pick. If you want to know what that is, you get the series of the seminar that I gave in January, or the seminar that I gave in Gitanagari in April, and you'll hear the kind of excerpts I use. And then what you can do is when you find one you think I would like, you copy it down verbatim with all the information on the tape and send it to me, and then I can. Just by reading that, I can judge whether I want to include it. And I'm building up different tapes that I can use on different occasions. I only have one tonight that I just found while here. This is Prabhupada, 1976. He's talking outdoors at New Vrindavan in the summer. I think it was July. If you were hearing, you could hear... it's well recorded, but it's outdoors. You can hear even bees coming close. They come. And you hear a motorcycle goes by. And smaller insects too. Other sounds. And Prabhupada, he's being massaged while he's talking here. And you can hear the massage going on too. And he's not really trying to project his voice. His voice is deep and sort of very relaxed to go along with the massage. So some devotees are around. He's had Pradyumna reading a Bhagavad Gita verse. And at the point where we're going to come, Pradyumna just finishes reading and then Prabhupada says, questions, meaning anybody have any questions? And you'll hear a devotee ask a question. Pradyumna just finished reading the purport about determination. So we have to have determination to practice Krishna consciousness, Dridha Vritta. And in the purport, the example is given of the bird who tried to empty the ocean of its eggs and was helped by Garuda. So it's interesting to hear the question and the answer. Especially, I'll just cue you a little bit about it, but what struck me is determination, of course, is such a serious topic, it's a deep topic, And we may think of it as always necessary, and especially to reach advanced stages. But Prabhupada, he defines it in a very elementary way. And he talks about initiation and vows. Let's see, maybe I should put it up here. The speakers can... Okay. And then volume is here. Okay. Okay. If I think anything's not clear, you can sit down. I'll stop it.
Thus the sparrow became happy by the grace of Garuda. Similarly, the practice of yoga, especially bhakti yoga in Krishna consciousness, may appear to be a very difficult job. But if anyone follows the principles with great determination, the Lord will surely help, for God helps those who help themselves.
No, boy.
So is there ever, for someone whose determination wavers and slackens here and there, is there ever a point where the neophyte devotee is in danger of just forgetting everything and falling, tumbling completely backwards?
Everyone is neophyte. You should practice determination. That's... If you cannot practice, then why should you enter into this associate? Let him remain alone. One who has entered with the determination that I must practice. So if he cannot practice, then why this makes up?
It's almost as if as soon as the question is asked, Prabhupada's like on guard and suspicious of, he doesn't like it. Not that he doesn't like the devotee, but he's jumps on the question. Anyway, go on. We really have to pay attention to the tape if the baby can.
So if he cannot practice, then why this makes up that I belong to Krishna consciousness movement? I am initiated. Why this? But he must practice. He determines that by practicing I will be successful. That is all. He has no determination. Why should he make it so?
The way an acharya answers the question is as important as the objective information that's conveyed. Sometimes they don't answer questions, and they certainly answer in their own way. So that's why I was so interested in this, not for just information about what is the position of a definition of determination in Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, but Prabhupada is saying that he doesn't want to hear any doubt about anybody's inability to be determined and not follow the four rules, is what he's getting at. If that's what you're talking about, that sometimes I don't have the determination, that, as a devotee said, and I fall back, and Prabhupada right away said, then why make a farce? Why make a sham and say you're a devotee? So, in other words, you could say he's not helping the person in his answer. He's not giving any tips about how to be determined. He's just like cutting it off, which is one way to answer. Sadhu was one who cuts. And because sometimes when we question, we're actually like begging questions rather than asking how can I surrender, or we're not aware of the grave person we're talking to and what's actually required of us. So he cuts the ground out right out from under us, which is what Prabhupada is doing here. If you think of it, it's like you assume the devotee, in one sense, he's asking in all innocence and fairness, how can I be more determined? And Prabhupada is saying, if he takes it personally, why are you asking this question? Why are you pretending to be a devotee? Don't make a sham of even saying that you're a devotee, or why did you get initiated in the first place? Why should you be asking a question like this? You have to have that much determination. Now you may say, well, how is that going to be so heavy, so sharp, so cutting? How's that going to help us? But it does. Like we hear about in some traditions, masters slap the students in the face or something like that, in Zen tradition or something. Or they say something to just wake you up. So Prabhupada is really being guru here. It makes you think, well, I must be determined then.
Madante vam dirabhata, dirabhata, that is what, determined. When one is determined, his success is sure. If it is not determined, then success or failure.
Can one develop determination gradually?
Quite gradually. When you promise before your spiritual master, there are no illicit sex, no gambling, no mistreating, why should you fall down? If you have no determination, how should you promise? In presence of the deity, fire, spiritual master, Vaishnava, why do you make this path? If you have no determination.
We always hear it's a gradual process, but in some things it's not gradual, it must be now. At the time we take initiation, we don't say, yes, I promise that gradually over the next 30 years I will try to curb down on my illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. If that's all you can do, then don't get initiated. There are similar questions where Prabhupada answers in the same way. Gentlemen's. Oh yeah, actually this tape, it ends there. But that's not the end of the meeting. It continues on the other side. Just a few moments maybe. It refers to a gentleman's determination. Meaning honor system that you promised.
If there are no deep determination, how should you promise? In presence of the deity, fire, spiritual master, Vaishnava, why do you make this fuss? If you have no determination. If you want to make it a fuss, that depends on you. But you should not.
When we make that promise.
Yes, you should not fall down. That is determination. That is gentleman's determination, that I have given my promise. How should I call that? But that is determination. I must respect the promise. That is called virabhat. So he is successful. Where is the difficulty? There's no difficulty. But if we want to cheat, there is another.
I sometimes talk about how, as I try to take this service of guiding disciples, that first of all, I have far less weight than Prabhupada does, but also, and for the same reason perhaps, the disciples, they demand more, they beg questions more to me, that they won't take an absolute answer. Partly it's because I speak the exact same language they do, I'm in the same culture and similar age, that they can just keep asking and asking questions. But Prabhupada, he's just holding the line so firm, he's not tolerating any questions. I say, well, somebody say, yeah, that's an ideal, I guess. But I mean, what about the fact that it's really hard? And what when we do fall down from our promise? He's just saying, no, no, no. You shouldn't fall down. If you're going to fall down, why did you get initiated? And I don't take pictures now when I speak. So I admire for different reasons that ability of Prabhupada to hold his gravity. and I appreciate the way the disciples cannot crack it out of their respect for him. Now, whether they obey or not, that's another thing. It's not that Prabhupada was able to make everybody obey him. He said, and he knew that. He said, if you don't, that's your thing. But as far as what I'm teaching, and as far as what the philosophy is, this is what it is. I don't resent taking the role that I have to take, but it's wonderful to hear him. We should try to follow him. And even if I can't project that, I have that conviction that that's what it's all about. That's what the disciple promised. And that if they can't follow the rules and regulations, then they don't have determination. But neither did Prabhupada, although he's cutting off in talk, he doesn't cut off mercy, he doesn't cut off relationship. So that even if somebody doesn't follow the rules and regulations, we don't cut them off. But they should know that they're cheating and they're cutting themselves off from spiritual advancement, and that they can get back to it if they just pick up what he's saying. What he's saying is helpful. It's not that you go away just blasted because he's so uncompromising, but you just face yourself and say, well, that's right, he's right, I promise. So what is this so-called problem? I don't have any problem. As he said, what's the difficulty? There's no difficulty. I just have to cheating, I promise, so I have to do it. And all of a sudden you can do it, and all these excuses and everything, they're just in the realm of cheating. That you've been cheating your spiritual master and cheating Krishna. And by not being chipped away at, Prabhupada enables you to do that, to see yourself.
If we have no determination, we should not take up this land. Therefore, chance is given that stay with us for 6 months or 1 year, be determined, then be initiated.
Then be initiated.
If you are not determined, what is the use of false initiation?
So this is Prabhupada's standard. It's not all right to promise and then not follow. Like there are dozens, there are hundreds of Prabhupada's disciples who promise and don't follow now. And in another, you know, in the attempt to be one spiritual family, we're all trying to come together and not always bring that embarrassing point up. Are you following Prabhu? Are you following the... Especially on occasions of reunions, and especially when very senior devotees who come, they can come and tell memories of when they were there with Prabhupada. So everything seems to be all right. But we shouldn't forget what he's saying here also, that that it's not all right. And that should be... And that the so-called difficulty is no difficulty at all. So why should it be? Why should it be regarded as, in a sense of permissiveness, that it's all right when there's nothing to prevent you from following, except this lack of determination? And I'm repeating myself, I know. But when you ask, but I don't have that determination, because he just throws it back at you. So it's just, you have it. You do have it. You can do it.
Sometimes this weakness seems to be...
The weakness has to rectify itself.
It's like the devotees inadvertently, they're like lawyers for weakness. They're like pleading for fall down. And they don't mean to be saying that. But next to Prabhupada, sounds like what they're saying. And if they listen, and they say, what am I saying? You know, I'm arguing on behalf of weakness and maya. And everything like that. And Prabhupada's arguing on behalf of Krishna and vows. He does that by not allowing them to get more than two words out of their mouths. He said, but weakness. He said, why are you talking about weakness? Talk about strength. Don't be in league with weakness. This is Sadhu Sangha. I want to play a little more, but that side doesn't have a reverse. I want to hear that again, that person saying weakness.
Sometimes this weakness seems to be...
The weakness has to rectify itself. Why give any importance to weakness? Weakness is weakness, rectify it.
Is the minimum determination. His promise of following four regular principles, chanting 16 rounds daily, that is minimum determination. Then from there, it must increase.
Initiation means minimum. Just beginning. That is the dictionary meaning, initiation.
Any questions? Yes. That my nature? Yeah. I don't think I want to repeat it. It was hard enough to say. I don't, as an admission, I don't. I can, if you ask me in a letter, I'll write again. I can write you a letter. But I certainly try to represent what he said. I guess in a simple version of what I said, Sri Peter's just said that I can't be as heavy as Prabhupada. That's all I was saying. And that the devotees may not be as submissive to me as they are to him. But that basically the same exchange is in place. Yes. Yeah. The devotee didn't get out what he was going to say. He said, sometimes this weakness, and Prabhupada said, weakness, then rectify it. Why give so much importance to weakness? He was going to say something about weakness. Maybe, you know, how this weakness comes upon us. Sometimes, although we're sincere, the weakness comes or something. So Prabhupada, like, yeah, just said that. If there's weakness, then rectify it. This kind of conversation, and this submissive hearing, this is not just ordinary thing. You can go away from a session like this and just have your head really cleared and gain conviction and think obstacles that were there are no longer there. He said, you know, you just walk out of a session and say, I can do it now. You know, I can give up what might have been a lifelong addiction, you know, of illicit sex intoxications. I can do it. How have you changed so much? Well, Prabhupada just said that it's just there's no difficulty and I can give it up. And I must. You just get the determination. Determination is a blessing from Krishna. But it's a strength that he'll enable us to use if we're sincere. Prabhupada is compassionate to the fact that devotees are so, you know, we're addicted to these problems and essentially weak and are trying to overcome big problems in their lives. But he's displaying his compassion in this way. How else can he help? Not just by sitting and holding their hands or psychoanalyzing them or something, or giving them some drug to take them off the drug, like different people are trying to help people with habits. But this is, it's a transcendental method. Is take the chanting of Hare Krishna and follow these rules and regulations and you'll be able to do it. So when one of his students in this line speaks about wavering, he just says, hold on, you know. Hang in there. Do it. You must. So he's giving them strength and telling them how to do it. Don't waver. Don't give in to weakness. Don't talk about weakness. Rectify. It's like we have when we have an inner dialogue with different demons or evil or temptation, it's best not to go on and on with the dialogue, but just cut it off. You know, if Maya is saying, why don't you go down and go into this place and engage in this illicit activity? And if you just talk it out too much, then you're already being implicated. You just stop. With Prabhupada sort of like that. One tactic of a pleading devotee, so I say inadvertently pleading for Maya, is to say, well, that's the ideal, but here's where we're at, so let's talk about where we're actually at. And then the speaker, he comes right down to that level, and then you're just talking about, you know, okay, well, try to just do it 3 times a month instead of 4 times a month, or something like that. But, nobody put it like that to Prabhupada. If they said, well, that's the ideal, but here's where we're at, he's saying, why are you there? You should be here. This is I'm Guru, this is Krishna consciousness. If you're not here, then don't talk. Why talk down there? Talk here. Why talk? I can't do it. Talk, I can do it. Yes. Yeah, determination based on love. Then you won't fall to the weakness or disobey. That certainly must be there. Like, although Prabhupada is refusing to analyze things so much, but we can analyze a little that, you know, what is the basis of the determination that he's speaking of? That he says you promised. So, because you promised, you can't undo your promise. So, promises do get undone, and how does that happen? But if there's a firm sense of obedience and love, then that forms the honor. One doesn't want to break the honor. He feels indebted to the spiritual master and to the relationship itself. And values it. It's the most valuable thing, so I must keep the honor of it, and that's my determination. Because if I break the basic vows which form the relationship, then I've vitiated the relationship. A nice point. That it's love, it's not just rules for rules' sake. Let's leave that then. You can see how powerful it is. I could have talked on this subject and said, Prabhupada once said this, Prabhupada said this, but by having the sound vibration come in the room, it's such a different dimension. All right, so now I have a few questions that devotees have asked. This is after recently I was in Philadelphia and then again in Baltimore. I gave different classes just about the chanting the holy names. So after that I got some questions. I appreciated that you spoke on the holy name and on chanting last night. One thing you said was that Krishna consciousness is a process by which you can engage in bhakti while you are walking and sleeping and eating and working. I know Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes the distinction between the real activities of bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc., and Gona Bhakti, subsidiary activities that support Bhakti. Therefore, working in itself is not Bhakti if it is not accompanied by one of the nine processes that constitute direct devotional activity. I've been thinking about this quite a bit and trying to deepen my understanding of it. I wonder if you could speak more on how to increase our meditation on Krishna while we are engaging in other activities. When I think of Prabhupada speaking about working in Krishna consciousness, I don't think of this point, I don't think of him making a distinction between working in Krishna consciousness and Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Although, in some context, Bhakti Sandra Saraswati Thakur may have. But Prabhupada always encouraged us that the different things we were doing, they were just as good as chanting, like the planting the rose flowers on the temple grounds, or cleaning the pots. And whatever you're doing for Krishna, it's yoga. It's not karma or work. It's not inferior to sitting down and chanting Hare Krishna, or specifically remembering the Leela of Krishna, or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. It's assumed, and there's no question, of not doing those activities on a regular basis, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So in that sense, we're always doing one, and we're always doing the other. But it's not that when you're not actually chanting, when you're thinking about your service, that that's just supportive or inferior. I never get that impression from Prabhupada, but I get the encouragement that the words kirtan, for example, is not confined to cartels, but it's any kind of glorifying of Krishna. So, as for meditating on Krishna while we work, that can be very, very simple. I have another question about that. I'll get into that a little later on the other question. But I just want to make this point. And I wanted to make a further point. The fact that for myself, when I answer a question, I try to remember what Prabhupada has said. I feel confident that I can answer a question, and I mean that you can also, but I wanted to just explain my own in a meeting like this, disciples' meeting, and also at a time when we have access to so many different sources than something specifically Prabhupada gave us. There's so many texts we can read directly and so on of Gaudiya Vaishnava. So my tendency to just answer what he said. I wrote down 3 points why I feel so confident in giving replies exclusively from what he said. One is, I feel confident because I know it best. So certainly you feel confident, anyone would, you know, when you're really on your when you're on your ground and your field and you really know it well, like a scientist when he's talking about his specialty, then he feels confident. You ask him something out of his field, he'll do the best he can. He's remembering different things, but he's not in his element. So that's one reason I feel confident. I know Prabhupada from tape. I know him from book. I know him from things in my memory that he's said, from other devotees have said. Their memoirs is like such a milieu that we're immersed in of Prabhupada that this is our element. Another reason is that it's a matter of Shraddha. So it's like you gain energy by doing it. You feel it's a real act of devotion and loyalty. So that gives you energy. You don't feel, you know what? I hope this is all right to answer what I read in that Gaudiya Math book or in that translation. But anyway, here goes. You know, I hope it flies. Hope nobody questions me on it. I hope I got it right. Then there may be different. It may not be giving you that same energy of feeling Shraddha as you speak it. So that gives you confidence. Not that we become arrogant about it, or, you know, I'm a Prabhupada man and waving the flag to my own loyalty. But nevertheless, you're feeling that by speaking exclusively what he said, you're making an act of Shraddha, which is devotion. And then third, you can call this like, this is the objective reason why it's okay. It's certainly valid. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, if someone says, well, wait, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he's not the only teacher. There's a lot of other viewpoints and emphasis. And then you can say, okay, that's true, I know. But is it wrong that I answer what my guru has said according to Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta? Is that wrong? And then say, no, you're perfectly, what you're doing is very nice. you have very nice faith in your spiritual master. It's certainly valid. So even on that grounds, you feel confident. It's not that you're being sentimental fanatic. It may be that you're not such a great scholar, but you've got all these other strengths when you do this. In fact, you may have to bow out if you're asked certain questions that you didn't find discussed in Prabhupada's books. And refer them to other sources where they may find it. Okay. Yeah.
Just a little comment in connection with what you were saying. When I was first trying to get a spiritual master with you, I used to pray to Prabhupada because I wasn't so sure what I would do since you left the plant. And I used to listen to you speak and you said, Prabhupada said. I said, I wonder what he thinks.
This is from a devotee here in this temple. Asked me a question. I wrote her a letter. I'm aspiring to be a Sankirtan devotee, but I find it very difficult to concentrate and become more internal while doing book distribution. Certainly Sankirtan cannot be done mechanically unless I fix my mind on Krishna and totally depend on him only. I don't think I will be able to continue book distribution for a long time. Therefore, I wanted to ask you, how can I actually develop the mood of constant prayer? I think that not only on Sankirtan, but at every step of my life, it is just essential to feel helpless and dependent on the Lord's mercy. So, I advised her to just make prayer as simple as possible. And just like pray to Krishna to please give me the strength to do this service. Real simple prayers and calling out to Krishna. Her awareness, or any devotee's awareness of the need for this is very good. That we have to always ask Krishna's permission, ask Krishna's help, and try to do it all the time. We can also do it by, of course, by chanting Krishna's names in a mood of supplication. And I said, of course, what she's asking is a very great thing. That's another point. For quite a few years, I've been sometimes had like a dabbling interest in the concept of a constant prayer. But it's a, I realize more and more, you know, it's a rare achievement. It's like asking to be in samadhi, that you can link moment to moment in constant awareness of Krishna, either by chanting or by praying to him and so on. So anyway, knowing how difficult it is, and knowing what she's asking for, it's like asking for the moon, like a dwarf asking for the moon. I advised her that if you can't do it all the time, at least whenever you think of it, you should pray to Krishna. And do it. Don't think because you can't do it all the time that it's not a worthy endeavor to try to do it all the time. It's like the reality is once in a while you remember that you'd like to think of Krishna all the time. You even remember it. Oh yeah, that's what I want to do.
The beginning of the verse was from Prabhupada papers.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do the very difficult thing, which is the thing that ultimately want to attain. It seems like, well, it's in the future, and you have to aspire for it, but you have to develop real enthusiasm and zeal to achieve it. And when we develop that, we see how far away it is, then maybe you might think, well, let me go at a more medium pace or a different pace, and maybe that might be a bona fide thing. And then sometimes if we try that, then we find ourselves feeling separated from that time when we're intensely trying, even though it seems so difficult. In other words, when you try the hardest, then the difficulties seem to be more pronounced, because the medium or lower path,
yeah,
you don't get so much. Doesn't seem so difficult, but then again, the feeling of...
At least constant absorption on some level should always be there. Easing off doesn't mean easing into Maya, you know, completely switching out of Krishna conscious. Now it's, I'm not so advanced, so now I get completely into Maya activities. But always be in Krishna consciousness. If I can't think of the Astakaliya Leela, what Krishna is doing at each time of the day, still, at every if I can't think of Krishna at every moment, if I can't chant Hare Krishna at every moment, yet at every moment, I can be engaged in something Krishna conscious. I'm washing a pot, that's for Krishna. I'm in the temple, I'm washing a pot, or I'm out on Sankirtan. I'm always doing something in Krishna consciousness. The force of that tape that we played, was Prabhupada was also saying, you know, it's Krishna consciousness is not something in the future, it's now, you know. And that's again why it was assuring what he was saying. So it may be a primary level, but what you're implying also, you know, is that's also we have to vary. Sometimes we put the foot on the accelerator. Sometimes we get, or it just happens to us. We get the mercy and we get more intense, and then later less intense. But always engage in service. There's rhythms. You can't always be at the peak. So, like the good businessman, you should make money in all the markets. You know, when the market is down, what does Prabhupada say? When the market is down, prices are low, he buys commodities. And then when prices are high, he sells and he makes a lot of money. So he makes money a lot. So you can always, according to your own inspiration or lack of inspiration, you can always be doing something. Always in Krishna consciousness. Not allowing Maya to take over. I want to save some time for the last thing I want to do. Somebody had a question on these things? Okay, then I'll switch over to having a reading. From my writings. Since January, I've been writing something based on Srimad Bhagavatam called A Poor Man Reads the Bhagavatam, and the first volume of it is completed and it's going through production at Gitanagari Press to be published this year. And I want to talk a little bit about it and read some of it. It seemed to me when I received the inspiration for this that it's a kind of a very happy combination of things that I've been trying to bring about in writing, and that is to, as Haryasva kindly said, that I always repeat Prabhupada. So I want to hold up that standard and just repeat the teachings of Prabhupada from his purports in writing. But I also want to know more and more that I'm doing it actually from my heart. And I want to be honest about my inability to be a perfect devotee, a perfect representative of Prabhupada. More and more that seems important to me, and it even seems to be an important contribution to make to the society's devotees, to manifest this honesty, even when it means admitting lack of ideal, to save us from pretense. I really started exploring that kind of writing in this book, Shack Notes. And then, so sometimes I would write a book more like Niti Shastras, where there was none of that free writing. And then sometimes write a book like radio shows, where it's like the other end of the spectrum. But in the poor man reads the Bhagavatam, I found like a structure to put these two tendencies together. And the structure was, the method is, that I start with the Bhagavatam, with the first verse, just as if I'm another commentator, to make comments on the Bhagavatam after the verse and after Prabhupada's purport. I would write a comment. And in the mood of like giving a Bhagavatam class, trying to raise different points. And then after a while, I would stop that and just write what I was actually thinking, which wasn't always the perfect thoughts as represented from the Vyasa-san speaker. And the reader would be quite aware of this change. One devotee, let's see. One of the devotees who's doing copy editing on this poor man's book made a comment that I like this. It isn't pretentious. I like especially that you discuss Siddhanta, but sometimes you may, quote, stray, unquote, to something else, because that's how our minds are like. At least I know mine is. The occasional asides are like breathers from the, quote, heavy, unquote, philosophy without having to put the book down. So what I do is take a verse, write straight philosophy, then just write free write, and then I compare it to like a cow having a long rope. Then I come to the end of my rope, and instead of just being nowhere, having indulged the actual straying nature of my mind, I come back to the next verse. So then you go just again back to straight perfection and back under the firm order of Guru to speak only what's perfect. And again I do that, and again go to honestly saying what I actually feel as I'm writing, or what I actually feel about the philosophy, the gut reaction, and this, so forth and so on. So I don't really know how successful it is. I'm anxiously awaiting the book to come out to see it in book form. But I got off to a good charge, and I wrote enough for a first volume, a second volume, and almost I've got about 360 pages of a third volume. I'm trying to make them 400 or 500 pages, and I'm including drawings with them too. So recently I've been taking a break from it, but I'm hoping to get back to doing it again. So I want to take advantage of this audience to read a little bit, and I hope you like it. Okay. What I'm reading from is unedited, and I'm just kind of jumping around when I get to the free writing part, just picking out some things. So I'll read from 1.5.21. Your goodness has perfect vision. You yourself can know the Supersoul, personality of Godhead, because you are present as the plenary portion of the Lord. Although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. Please therefore describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna more vividly. This is Narada speaking to Vyasa after he's been chastising Vyasa for not writing and glorifying Krishna. Comment. Narada has been speaking as Vyasa's spiritual master, reprimanding him for writing inferior Vedic literature that caters to people's sense-enjoying spirit. We've accepted that Narada can criticize Vyasa because he's the disciple in need of guidance. But now Narada speaks on a different level, addressing Vyasa as the plenary incarnation of the Supreme Lord and possessed of perfect vision, Amoghadrik. Rather than reprimand Vyasa, or even presume to instruct him, Narada requests him, please describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord more vividly. Srila Prabhupada informs us that Vyasa is not dependent on a spiritual master, because he is the spiritual master of everyone. But Vyasa is teaching us that everyone must accept a spiritual master. Another behind-the-scenes thing is, I'm getting questions from devotees, and that's how I write these comments. If you'd like to take part in that, you could. There's one devotee in Canada who's assembling all these questions for me and giving them to me. And so when I read each verse, I have different questions by devotees, and I'm writing an answer to them. So I'm explaining Vyasa taking a spiritual master. Vyasa descends into this world just to enlighten and deliver the fallen and forgetful souls. It is actually Lord Krishna himself who appears in the incarnation of Vyasa to free people from the bondage of material existence. There's a limit to how I can hold your attention, which... Also, I don't know how long I can hold your attention when you're reading the book also. But this goes on for a few pages. I just want to give you a taste. So this is like one side of it. And then I'll end it and read some of the other mood. So then it ends here. Thus, there are at least two important lessons being brought out by the drama of Vyasa's dissatisfaction and instruction by Narada. One is to focus on the necessity for Vedic scripture to directly glorify Lord Krishna, and the other lesson is that everyone, no matter how educated or mystically equipped he may be, needs to accept a spiritual master. Now, continuing this comment, I just skipped some lines. Now we're in the shack. Nothing is perfect in this world. Pour out some sentiments. What is the deep dissatisfaction in your heart? Do you have none? Then that's a fault. Vyasa saw that he wasn't fully glorifying Krishna, and that left him feeling empty. That's the emptiness, the hollow shell. You don't love Krishna as you'd like to, want to. I feel that I can't read this free writing in such a public... gathering. This happened at Giranagari too. I said I was going to do a whole class on it, and then I thought that it would be better in the intimacy of reader and book. So you have to excuse me. Let's see, I had two sections. So here's another section. New verse. And let me try again, see if I get more courage this time. O Muni, in the last millennium, I was born as the son of a certain maidservant engaged in the service of brahmanas who were following the principles of Vedanta. When they were living together during the 4 months of the rainy season, I was engaged in their personal service. Comment. Now Narada begins to tell his autobiography from a previous life. He begins matter of fact, although most of us have no access to past life memories. Imagine if we did. Maybe we'd be less attached to our identity in the present body, nation, sex, and memories. Why does the spiritual master suddenly switch topics and talk of himself this way? Surely it will be relevant. It will have some instructive value for Vyasa and for the world. But even if Narada spontaneously decided to speak of himself, as Srila Prabhupada occasionally did in his room with a few disciples, the devotees welcome it. The life of the person Bhagavat is also Bhagavatam. We can observe his life and allow him to guide our own life. We can be with him in many ways. Unless he discloses his past, we'd never know. In his purport, Prabhupada immediately gives the lesson that we may find in the previous life of Narada. He was born of, quote, insignificant parentage. Narada only mentions his mother, not his father, and she was a maidservant. The boy used to serve Brahmin guests who stayed with them during the rainy season. Prabhupada's point is that even if one is low-born, he can become elevated by association with saintly persons. That is what happened to Narada, who rose from a maidservant's son to become a great sage after serving the brahmanas in his house. Then I quote Prabhupada, "Service of the devotee is more valuable than service of the Lord." And skip lines. So much to think about here. It's not just that you do okay once you get a guru. You do stop your sinful acts very soon, and you learn book lessons in the science of God. Maybe we start wearing Vaishnava tilak and dress. But beyond that, you may learn to transform everything into the spiritual abode by His grace. This story of Narada is just beginning with the opening verse about his past life. Let's savor it. In the shack, a strong wind is up. We hear it more than feel it at first. Deep wind combing the trees. Or when it's summertime, then you really hear it through the leafy branches. Now it stops, silent, then comes again. This is one kind of music. Can you transform it into the spiritual abode? See the treetops move. Can it bring you thoughts of Krishna consciousness? Narada, in his previous life. The thing is, you can transform the world into KC, as Narada was transformed into a sage. Don't expect the usual. The artist seeks new ways. The truth is the sun on the page and the blue-green color of ink. There is no way to just let loose and still be in SB. The Indian book, published in 1962, me trying to communicate to you. The mouse trying to gnaw through the door when we were in Gitanagari at night. And the wind and its soft breeze weather. Madhu working on his van to get ready to ship it over the Atlantic. I sometimes think, what if it all ends in ruin? During my afternoon nap, I fell into some near-sleep reverie on that. All will cease to be. What did Keats write? Sometimes I have been half in love with death. I wasn't thinking like that, but thinking of these visits, writings, airplane trips, showing up in new places, etc. Where does it all lead you to? Oh, well, when you're dead, you don't have to worry. Someone's going to call you and tell you to come out from seclusion. No? Pal, you'll be thrust into the next life. Won't be fun to come back. To Gitanagari, I mean, to Kali Yuga. You don't get born with all your seniority that you've earned or gained in this lifetime. You start from scratch. In this life, it seems certain I'll hang on as a devotee. Some form of devotee association will continue for me, and I'll get honor enough to provide board and lodgings, and maybe someone may read what I write. But next life, you start a wailing babe. Thoughtful. What's coming down the road? Is it another eye ache? You could have a lot worse. Anyway, I did reverie. But that's the kind of thing. It goes way off from the topic, and yet it's part of the topic. As sometimes in this poor man's book, I explain the method itself and how the Bhagavatam can be considered in a very expansive way as containing everything in the universe. And so whatever I write is in the Bhagavatam, or at least it's a struggle of a person to read the Bhagavatam. And some of the devotees who have read it, they think it works, and that it actually describes what does all happen to us when we read, that we lose our attention span and go somewhere else, and then it comes back. So I'm kind of writing that story of the actual experience of reading Bhagavatam by someone who's not in samadhi, which is probably most people. So mostly we read the perfect book and then our life is separate. So here a little bit of that real life is mixed in with the Bhagavatam. And I hope I'll be able to continue it because it's such an all-accommodating structure of being able to do both things. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I've written about 1,400 pages, and I'm only up to... I'm coming to the end of the fifth chapter of the first canto. So I'm going slowly. Which I think is a good sign. It's not like I'm racing through the material. Yeah.
I kind of was expecting, I was hoping for something like that. And I know from your style of writing that, you know, as you go on, it will be more things. So you can, and say you can say it will be looser, it will give more information. And I find that people are inspired by this type of writing. And, you know, like you said, the other forms of writing, you feel like it kind of prepared you for this. Mm. Because people feel like there's somebody who's in a leadership position, they can identify you. You know, he's a nice devotee, he's eventually, I can identify with him. He's not just saying that it's all Krishna, but it all comes back to Krishna.
Ah, yeah.
So, I definitely encourage you to
thank you. Coming from you, that's important. It's a daring thing to do, but we have to sometimes do things that are daring, and then I pray to Prabhupada that whatever mistakes are there, I'm doing the best I can, and please accept the offering. So I hope this occasion will be served to help me get back to work on it. Stop my vacation.